Last night I had the opportunity to see my nephew John. My nephew is, he was born back in April, so he's like, I don't know, 6 months old or so. So, you know, he's old, practically boring at this point, you know. He's going to go off to college in a few weeks, I imagine. But, you know, in the meantime, it's been kind of fun, you know, just seeing his growth and his learning. The thing that I love is holding him. And it was a simple gesture that I would hold him above my head and then bring him back down. I was discussing with my sister, his mother, how he, you know, babies still struggle with object permanence. You know, the peekaboo is very effective at this age, largely because, you know, if you obscure your face, suddenly you cease to exist in the eyes of the child. It's that moment where we just sort of forget. It's fascinating to me because I could lift him above my head. And as long as I lift him on my head, I ceased to exist, and he just couldn't figure out why he was suddenly over 6 feet tall. And then I'd bring him back down and be excited, and I came into existence again. It was fascinating to me. I thought about it, and of course, you know, we can write it off and say, well, of course, he's a baby, so it's not going to stick with him. But we're adults. I mean, we remember things. You know, we have object permanence, so it's different for us. It's not like we're going to ever act like children and forget everything that's right in front of us, right? Right? It's a fascinating problem I have, especially when I read the book of Exodus. I want you to think about this for a moment. Moses is on the mountain of God. The people are waiting at the base of the mountain. He's gone up to the mountain to receive the commandments. These 10 commandments, this starting point of the law that tells them exactly how it is that they are to conduct themselves in their life. But think about how they got there. They didn't just all get together one day and say, you know what would be great? I think God's on this mountain and he's going to give us the law. All we have to do is show up. No, they were in Egypt. They're in Egypt in slavery, bondage. They have no way out. There is no escape. And Moses comes to them. And Moses appeals to Pharaoh. Let my people go. And Pharaoh says, no, it's a great time. I think we've seen 10 Commandments of Prince of Egypt or any number of 1,000 other films that kind of depict part of it, at least, what's going on in this particular chapter in the life of the Israelites. Eventually they have the 10 plagues, and Pharaoh gives in, and he relents, and he lets the people go. And the people of Israel, the Israelites, the people of Israel, go forth with all of their stuff, and sometimes the stuff of their Egyptian neighbors as well. They kind of despoiled Egypt to do this, and they head out into the desert. And Pharaoh recants, and he decides he wants this people back, and so he sends his army to go get them, and he chases after them. But at a certain point, they find themselves between a sea and an army, and there's no escape. And they are sure that they are going to die. Not the first time they were sure they were going to die in so many weeks, but yet another instance where they were sure they were going to die. And then the sea is parted. And they pass on dry land. And then the Pharaoh army chases after them. And the sea returns and it washes them away. He destroys the Egyptian army. He leads his people out. They encountered 10 plagues. They suffered none of them. And yet they witnessed each of them. They're fed in the desert. There's no food out there, but food is always there. It's always made available to them. It's not like the desert is naturally ready to feed an entire nation on the move. It really isn't. And yet God continues to feed them, literally. He protected them from Pharaoh's army. He protects them and removes them from Egypt. And he takes them to the base of the mountain. And Moses goes up the mountain to receive the law. And the people sit at the base of the mountain. And what do they say? God's given up on us. It's all over. We're about to die. I mean, it's all over. Obviously, we need to find a new God to worship. You ever have that moment where you kind of walk away and you come back in and you scream at your children, I was gone 5 minutes. How do you make a mess this fast? We now have this on a nationwide level. Moses is gone just 5 minutes, and suddenly they're looking for a new God to worship. It's gone. We might insist that we have object permanence and that, you know, babies might struggle with that, but we know better. But here we have it, an actual real life example. And they've forgotten. They've forgotten every gift that has brought them to that mountain. They've forgotten everything that has formed them as a nation, that has called them out of Egypt, so that they might be formed and fashioned and particularly called in this way so that they can come face to face with this God who wants to give them everything. And he's gone. For moments. They don't even send anyone looking for Moses. It's not even like, gosh, Moses has been up there a long time. Maybe we should send someone to look for him. They're like, nope, Moses is dead. It's all over. It's gone. Let's find something else to do. And they go to Aaron, Moses' brother, and they say, give us a God to worship. Moses is obviously gone. Give us something. And I want you to bear in mind what happens next. And I want you to think about this. When was the last time, and I want you to just think about your memory, the last time you remember looking at one of your children as they stood next to something broken, and you ask them, how did this happen? And they look at the broken thing, and they look up at you, and they say, I don't know, it just did. I want you to know your children are being biblical. It's true. Because when Moses comes down from the mountain and he confronts his brother and he asks, where did you get this golden calf? I'm not kidding when I tell you that Aaron actually tells Moses, I took gold from the people, they gave me this gold, I threw it into the fire, and it just came out that way. I have no idea why Aaron believes that anyone should buy this story about a bull. But they do. And here it is. It marches out. It just happened. Not really sure why your children are biblical, but you know, it happens. They gave up on God so quickly. They gave up on God so quickly, and they forget all of the gifts that brought them to that moment. And it strikes me as fascinating. Because in this moment, we're supposed to be continuing with God, but as soon as a moment's adversity, a difficulty, a hardship, something gets hard in our life, we forget all of the incredible moments that God has given us leading us up to that moment. We seem to be ready to surrender all of the facts that God has looked after us and watched us and provided for us and given us these gifts throughout our lives that have brought us all the way to this moment, and we focus on the thing that hurts us in the knees. We think, that's it, God gave up on me. Why did God give up on me? I don't understand, I'm a good person. And here it is, God just abandoned me. And it begs the question, how quickly do we forget? How quickly do we forget years of God giving us gifts in exchange for the moments? And I know some moments can last a year or longer. But moments where we are faced with difficulty, with hardship, that we go chasing after some other God just as quickly, that we go looking for the fire to just produce something else for us. And we'll take whatever load of bull wants to wander onto that fire. It's a fascinating thing because God says to Moses, he says, these people that you let out. I like how they were his people right up until this moment, but you know, now that they've turned on him, they're Moses' people. This people that you let out, they're really stiff-necked. They've already abandoned me. Tell you what, Moses, I'm just going to wipe them all out. We'll start over with you. You'll be the next Abraham. It's a fascinating moment. Seems kind of fickle of God to decide to suddenly wipe out an entire nation that he spent all this effort trying to get out of Egypt. The fact of the matter is, he's trying to form Moses as much as he's trying to form the people. And he knows that Moses is in for hardship and difficulty and pain and sorrow and all these things as well. And so he needs to form Moses' heart just as much. So he says, Moses, what do you say? I'll just wipe him out. We'll start over with you. And it's Moses who has to come back to God and say, No, I know they're stiff-necked people. I know they're fickle, and I know they give up quickly. But they're my fickle, confusing, stiff-necked people. And they weren't saved. Let me tell you, it's an easy temptation to think, why don't we just wipe them out and start over? But it's not that simple. We need to strive to improve the situation we have. Not just give up and say, well, it was a nice try, let's wipe out and start over. We don't get to just wipe off the board. These are people we're talking about. And we need to be something more. We live in a world today that definitely seems to struggle with doing the moral thing. We definitely live in a world that has entered into a bizarre stage where, as someone put it to me earlier this week, we've really seemed to have lost a sense of what we're doing as opposed to what we should be doing. We're losing a sense of just good, simple, moral conduct. We don't see kind gestures as often as we'd like to see them anymore. We're frustrated. We're stymied. And we seem to have an increase in violence instead of an increase in respect. But you know, the thing that comes back over and over again is this overwhelming sense that how is any one person supposed to fix it? And I think it's so essential for all of us to bear in mind that this is not the first time we've been here. We were back here in Exodus. It took just a moment for Moses to go up the mountain, for them to suddenly give in to whatever was easiest around them, to give in to something simpler, to give in to what interested them more than doing what was right. And it's in those moments that it is all the more essential that we stand up for what is right. You know, it's an easy temptation to look around at the world and say, you know, the world's going crazy. And nobody's really following this particular little tiny law. So, you know, what difference does it make if I don't follow it either? It's not like anybody else is doing it. No one's going to call me out on it. I mean, it's just a little thing. I'm just not going to worry about it today. Except that now, more essential than ever, is when we need to be examples of doing what's right. Especially if no one else is doing the right thing around us. You know, I don't know if it comes up in any of the movies, but interestingly enough, when Moses comes down the mountain, he actually addresses the people. And while it looks really cool in the movies to have one guy kind of come down and start yelling at people and everyone sort of stops and listens to one, it's not really how moms usually work. You need more than one shouting voice. Interestingly enough, there are 12 tribes of Israel. And each of the 12 tribes, they had a certain section of land in the promised land that was set apart for them. Except for one. You know, the entire tribe of Levi has no land that was apportioned to them. And the reason that is actually has to do with exactly this event. You see, the tribe of Levi didn't give in to the golden calf. They were not worshiping and giving in to the sense of what is giving up on Moses. They stood at the base of the mountain waiting for Moses to arrive. It was the Levites, one tribe among 12, this one sole brave tribe of Levi that waited for God, that knew God and had not given up on them, and waited for Moses to come back down to bring God back to the people, which is why God doesn't wear rings, by the way. All right, that's funny in my head, but, you know, we'll see how it works. It's just a tribe of Levi. And they brought him back to God. And I want you to think about this. We might look at the world and think to ourselves, it's too big. How are we supposed to fix this problem? How are we supposed to fix a nationwide morality problem? How are we supposed to fix a nationwide loss of a sense of direction and purpose and respect and what we are supposed to be doing in our life? I'm telling you right now, there's two things we need to remember, the first and foremost of which is, we're not in charge, God is. And as long as we keep trying to take that control back and insist that we're in charge, we're going to continue to struggle with this. Second thing I want to point out is that we might look at a nationwide problem and think it is overwhelming for us to do by ourselves. But I'm going to ask you to solve a nation. We need to make that effective change in our homes. And maybe our family won't believe that we're trying to make a better change. Maybe we can convince our neighbors. But we need to be that positive influence in the immediacy around us. We need to be better influences in our family. We need to be better influences on our neighbors. We need to be witnesses within our community here and now if we're ever going to affect anything. I'll give you the only other example I can think of right now. St. Augustine wrote about this exact problem, believe it or not. He also struggled with this back in the, he lived in the 5th century, so, you know, just a couple of days ago, but he wrote an example, a reminder of what it is that exactly we're supposed to do. And he wrote it as a man who's walking along a seashore. And as he's walking along the beach, along the shoreline, he's watching the tide go out. And as the tide goes out, he's watching as hundreds and hundreds of starfish are stranded on the beach. Under their own power, they will never make it back to the ocean. And they will die in the sun long before the tide ever comes back in. And as he looks along the shore and he sees all of these starfish, he thinks, wow, that's terrible. They're all going to die. And there's nothing we can do about it. And as he's walking along the shore, he comes across a small boy. And he watches as this boy, one at a time, goes down, and he picks up a starfish, and he throws it back into the ocean. He takes a few more steps, and he picks up a starfish, and he throws it back into the ocean. And he continues this, until he finally catches up to the man. The man takes him by the shoulder, and he looks at him, and he says, look at what you're doing. Look at the length of the ocean shoreline. Look at the endless beach in front of you. Look at the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of starfish that you will never get to because they will die long before you ever get to them. You will never make a difference. And the boy looks at the man and he bends down and he picks up the starfish at his feet and he throws it back in the ocean. He says, I'm pretty sure I made a difference for that starfish. I don't need you to fix the nationwide problem. Let's address our neighbors. Let's be witnesses to our family. Only one tribe stood up for Moses. That's all we're asking for. We become good witnesses today